sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Words, 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. It's great to have you with us today as we roll on. We're talking about traditions, Thanksgiving traditions and things like that. And I know that it is totally off topic on sports, but yeah, we kind of changed directions a little bit. What's yours? Is your tradition something you eat, like Thanksgiving turkey dinner, ham? Is it, the Buners eat oysters? Kevin eats Burger King. I mean, we all kind of have our own little... Stop laughing, Sarah.
Now, do you have your TV on the whole day with the football games just in the background? Or is it targeted?
I'll actually watch. I'll sit down and watch. And then when it comes time to eat, to turn the TV off.
Right. We do that too. We have to turn the TV off a little bit.
We did while my father was alive, had to turn it off. But once I inherited the mantle of the patriarch of the family, sometimes it depends on who's on and how close it is. The TV does. Steve, do you take an afternoon nap after turkey?
I don't nap, so.
Okay.
So the answer obviously is no. It's something I don't do, period.
Okay, because I do.
Oh, I do. Absolutely. That's one of my favorite parts, is getting all that tryptophan from
the
turkey.
Yeah, that's
what it is. And then napping.
I see.
Steve, what do the Penn State football players do on Thanksgiving? You know, the students aren't here, but some of them live in dorms. Some of them live in off-campus apartments. You know, and the food service is generally closed down because the kids aren't on campus. So what do they do?
Practice is 11 a.m. tomorrow.
Okay.
They will go through your basic Thursday practice. So they'll probably finish up about 12:30 to 12:45. And then they will have a training table dinner for the players, but it also includes the families of the coaches and so forth. And they will, and Jim Hopi, who literally is my next door neighbor, Jim's house, I'm looking at it right now, is the one that is the primary training table chef for everything. He runs it. And he's the one that will serve it up, and Jim is just an awesome guy. Big Steeler fan, by the way. I mean, it was a big thrill for him to meet Jack Ham when I brought him over to the house one day. He thought that was the coolest thing going. And he'll take care of that. Then the players who are not traveling on the 70 are released to go home. So if you're not in the 70 travel group, you're released to go home at that point and enjoy the rest of your weekend. You know, no lift or anything like that because the season's over. And so that's what they'll do. Then tomorrow they'll do a walkthrough at about 2:30. Then we will leave at 3:15, go through security, probably wheels up between 4:15 and 4:30 once they get all the security done, and then get to Madison and probably be in Madison by, my guess is, maybe 6:30. It'll take about 2 hours.
2 hour flight there.
2 hour from point A to point B. And then they will, you know, go through the usual meetings and so forth, play the game, and then get back about 10:30, 10:45.
Now, how many players?
On Saturday night.
How many players and family members will actually get together tomorrow afternoon when they do the post-practice dinner?
They'll have 70 players that are traveling, and then all the coaches, so the 10 coaches, their families. And then they would include like people who aren't coaches but are staff members, like Jim Bernhardt and Bill Cavanaugh and people like that. They'd all be included in something.
And
like
Spider,
that. Spider, so also, of course, Spider would be Spider and Kirk and and Danny Sowash. Nobody ever talks about Danny, but Danny does an incredible job. And, this is all part of their quote football family. They're going to work out today. In fact, I think they're starting the workouts a little earlier this week. But they ran late today on meetings. They ran about a half hour, 45 minutes late on meetings today, so I don't know how that's going to translate into practice this afternoon. And, you know, he walked through, then they had a normal practice yesterday. They'll do normal stuff again today. You know, people have talked about the lack of contact, for example, you know, about thud and so forth. And there have been a few things that have happened this season. Bill was asked, and then he answered, when it came to, you know, how much contact you would have had based on reduced numbers. Okay, so he talked about thud. Joe Paterno did thud forever. Joe also coached and used thud often. Okay? Used to be, or in Joe's early days, they really hit a lot on Tuesday and Wednesday. And then he backed off to really doing a ton of hitting on Tuesday. And they still hit on Tuesday, you know, under Joe. But, you know, but thud was the primary thing. And as the season went, they hit less and less and less. Okay? That's how Joe did things. Now, the difference is that Joe never got up in front of the media and had to explain what they were doing about contact. He never had to sit there and explain, because of reduced numbers, what you do in that situation. Bill was asked about it. Bill is not doing anything in that regard different than Joe. Now, he has his own practice regimen, which is different. There's a different pace to it and so forth. It's a pace I really like, to be honest with you. I think it's a real modern professional pace that he has his team going through. Okay. Because everybody has their own way of doing it. Because the other way was successful 409 times. So, you know, he has his way of how he does things, because he's got to do things that are in his comfort zone. And they actually did, from the middle of October on, actually a fair amount of hitting. A lot of 9-on-7 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they did, and he never really talked. I mean, I asked him about it in one of the talk shows and in a pregame show, but that's the only time he talked about it the last 2 months of the season, when I brought it up. But it's, they actually hit more in mid-October through the first couple of weeks of November. I mean, and some pretty intense 9-on-7 drills. Now, when they do the Monday deal with the walk-on players, the run-ons, and also others, that's a full contact, all-out scrimmage every Monday with those guys. While the other players who are going to be playing in the game, or at least most of them playing in the game, would be doing conditioning with fits, that's when he'd do this deal with, and it was a full all-out, no holds barred scrimmage. But I think it benefited in the long run, like a guy like Brian Gaia. It benefited Derek Dowry. It really benefited Brandon Bell. He was a part of those Monday scrimmages every week. I think it helped out Gary Wooten a little bit. I think that it also helped out Evan Schwann. Helped out Evan Schwann a lot. Hartman, Mahan, and Nelson, it really helped. I mean, because they were involved in these things. Parker Cothran helped him out tremendously. I think it helped out Brandon Smith.
Yeah, actually, I think a lot of folks here in the Central Susquehanna Valley are really looking forward to seeing where Brandon is come next August.
He's a good football player.
He's a really good football player.
He's a good football player with very good football instincts. Now, we'll see how it pans out with depth and so forth.
Sure.
But he certainly is a guy that I think is a good player that I know everybody around here likes, and he's, you know, he has a chance down the road to be a contributor here. But that's what they did. You know, so the thud part, lack of hitting part, and so forth, which was played up a lot, but it was played up a lot because of the circumstances. Bill was never going to be asked about how much they hit, ever, until with the sanctions and the reduced numbers, like, well, you know, how are you going to handle this? I mean, you know, injuries, bumps, bruises. I mean, that's why he was asked.
Sure.
If they were at 85 scholarships and it was normal and there was a normal transition from Joe to Bill and so forth, then you would have, you know, that question never would have come up. Never.
No, it's Bill's press conferences and his statements to the media bore extra scrutiny and extra difficult questions because of the circumstances.
I think it just brought with it different questions. Yeah, I don't think the beat writers, I think, are marvelous around this team. Man, you could tell when I talked to them how much I like the beat writers. I mean, a lot. Just good people all the way through, whether it's Frank Badani from York. I haven't had Frank on this show yet, and I should, because Frank Badani's a guy I have immense respect for. Or Derek LaVar, or Donnie Collins, or obviously Rich Scarsella. You know, I mean, on and on, I could just go with just tick off one name after another of just, you know, we've had Neil Riddell on, of just people I just genuinely like, and I think are really pros as writers. Bob Flounders, Dave, Corey.
Patriot,
I mean, all...
Sure.
Yeah, all the way down through. Josh Moyer. You have to ask the questions that they were asking.
Sure.
You know, you have reduced numbers, so obviously there's a worry about, you know, who can get hurt. And that's one of the reasons why you don't see starters or even key backup guys running down on kickoffs, because you don't want to put them in that position, and eliminate one thing because you really need them to play defense.
Steve, one of the questions I think our listeners would be interested in, when you talk about beat writers, what kind of a media contingent is there that's the same group of people? What numbers are we talking about that scrutinize Bill's every practice, every coaching move, etc., on a weekly basis?
Well, let's see. I mean, these would be the guys who would travel. I mean, they're traveling guys. And you constantly see Bob Flounders, Dave Jones. Constantly see Corey Geiger, Neil Riddell. You constantly see Derek LaVaris. Mark Wogenrich from Allentown, whom I like Mark a lot. Rich Scarsella, who's about as good a guy as you're ever going to see. Donnie Collins from Scranton. Travis Johnson with the CDT, sometimes Walt Moody with the CDT.
Center Daily Times, for those of us over here in this part of the country.
Center Daily Times. And, you know, I can't remember the name of the Pittsburgh beat writer, because I just had him on the show two weeks ago. had him on the show.
So you've got base group of, 20, 25 guys just on the newspaper or internet side. Then you throw in the TV radio guys, etc.
Well, no radio guys travel unless it's Ohio State and maybe Michigan, but there are no radio guys that travel except for Jack and me.
Yeah.
We're it. And it'll be Joe Putnam this week. Lauren's going to do basketball, Lauren Criswell.
Mm-hmm.
So we're the only ones on that side. TV guys, the Penn State football Next Chapter crew will be out there. Don Hampton, Sade Alissimo, and DeVita Miles. So they'll be out there, and they're the ones that feed back all the footage that is then used in the show. And I know, because I'm the one that sets up the deal for them. You know, we all have our respective jobs there.
Right.
And so they're always there. And Bill Amin is the executive producer of that, and Topher Yorks. So there's always three of them there in that group out of the five. There's always three of those five at a game. And then every once in a while, Matt Maisel or Casey Kantz from Channel 6 or 10 in Johnstown, Altoona, respectively, every once in a while they go. Sometimes Pat Principe from WGAL.
That would be Lancaster, of course.
Yeah, Lancaster.
You get a little bit of channel 21 or 27 out of Harrisburg.
Yeah.
They tend to send some guys for home games.
To Beaver Stadium, but not on the road.
Not on the road. But, you know, I guess what my point is that most people don't realize, because they don't see the room on a post-game show, which is being televised, of Bills taking questions, because there's a huge group of media that's just following everything Bill O'Brien does.
Yeah, oh no, there is, and plus there are photographers like Joe Hermit, who's just a fabulous photographer. Harvey Levine, another fabulous photographer. You have to remember that the photog guys as well. So it's there's a big contingent that follows them, you know, everywhere they go. Bill has a great relationship with them, and I mentioned, in the question, for example, about Thud, for example. You have to ask that question, and Bill knows that, and he gave the answer. But after a while, you know, then it became like, well, is that the reason why? It's No, it's not the reason why. You know, but look, they played the game. I want you to remember this name, number 45. We're going to talk about what 45 means for you in a moment. You're on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on Pre-Auction Blowout.
Like a 2011 Ford Explorer Limited, only 12,000 miles, $34,999. 2010 Lincoln MKX, just one owner, $24,955. 2012 Kia Optima LX comes with a Carfax buyback guarantee, just $16,399. 2012 Hyundai Sonata, accident-free, fully serviced, just $13,796. And a like-new 2012 Ford Focus SE, lowest price promise, just $16,961. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive and see what your trade is worth, too, at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
It's a special night, by the way, before we get to what the number 45 means.
Okay.
The number 8 is also important. For those who are of the Jewish faith, we wish you Happy Hanukkah.
That's right.
This is the first night of the Festival of Lights and also the Feast of Dedication. So,
and it's the first time that Hanukkah and Thanksgiving have coincided in that sense, and it was a huge number of years. So
yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, so from us to all of you who celebrate Hanukkah, those of the Jewish faith, we wish all of you a happy Hanukkah and enjoy the Festival of Lights, the Feast of Dedication, and the next 8 nights on behalf of all of us to all of you who celebrate. Number 45. 45 is the available scholarship players that Penn State had on Saturday when they played Nebraska. Now, that's Nebraska football. Nebraska. Are there some walk-ons in the Nebraska 70-man traveling contingent? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, there's that one guy that's back in the corner somewhere, but that's...
right. Oh, but they probably have like 7 or 8 guys, Bob,
sure.
Realistically.
Exactly.
That are, you know... But Penn State, in a home game, played Nebraska into overtime with 45 recruited scholarship guys.
And held them to one touchdown... that you could be assessed against the defense.
Sure.
And that's a team that Nebraska's beaten a few good teams this year.
And no question. But that tells you that if this is the bottoming out, if this is the bottoming out moment for Penn State football with the sanctions, because the sanctions were meant to wreck the place.
Oh.
Okay? That's what they were meant to do. The sanctions were meant to wreck the place. Make no mistake about it. When you're talking about losing, all right, and being, you know, down 65 scholarships, 20 below each program in the country for 4 consecutive years, okay, that, you know, and take away bowl games and incentives and everything like that. I mean, they did everything they could except take them off TV, fine them, and did all sorts of stuff, right? Well, they've been able to go 14-9 the last 2 years, 8-4 and 6-5 to this stage. And with 20 scholarships available, and depending on how many guys come in early, there could be as many as 4 that come in early. Thus, you'd be allowed 24, a normal group, to get up to 75 for next year. And the healing of the program now kicks into gear sooner, and then the hope is that common sense prevails, and these young men who have worked hard in the classroom, in the community, and on the football field would get an opportunity of a just reward of a bowl game. And I would hope that would happen next year. But they played Nebraska with 45 guys, and I know people are justifiably upset that they didn't win the game because they pick out all sorts of areas where they could have changed it and won it. And believe me, as paying season ticket holders or paying ticket holders, you are entitled to your opinion. Your opinion counts a lot. And I'm glad you have that standard. It also tells you that the small margin of error with which they have had to deal with and how remarkable this two-year span is. There are three things that the NCAA didn't count on. I will talk about those three things following the news. A lot of numbers, 45, 8, and now 3. When we get to 1, that's when we tell everyone that Kevin's number 1.
He'll be happy to hear it.
Stop laughing, Sarah. Jeez.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Happy Hanukkah and also happy Thanksgiving. As we roll through this Wednesday together, no show tomorrow, a best of show. There was just so many to choose from. And then we'll be back on Friday, and guests will include Jack Ham, Lem Barney, and also John Bacon. We're looking forward to that on Friday as well to get you into the weekend and get you ready on our Friday Football Festival. So that is coming up. I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Keirwood's 11 to 15, Humbles Wharf. Now, we've talked about the number 45 and the scholarship players that were available to be used on Saturday. Now let's talk about the number 3. There are three things the NCAA never counted on, and we have to think about this Thanksgiving. Think about the sanctions that were in place, all right? The sanctions that were in place put together on July 23rd, 16 months ago. And when they announced it, it was a reduction in scholarships, and Penn State would have 2 years to get down to 65, and then be at 65 scholarships for 14, 15, 16, and 17. No bowl game in 12, 13, which we're in now, and then 14 and 15. Okay? That's why I think they're going to rescind it next year. I think they're just going to end it after 2 years. And that's just my opinion if Penn State continues to churn out positive reports. But there's also another one that we don't talk about as often, and that was the freedom of transfer rule. The freedom of transfer rule depleted them of 9 bodies. Some of them were very good football players: Kyrie Ford, Silas Red, Justin Brown, Anthony Farrah, among some others that down the road may or may not have helped. That rule remained, and that ability to transfer stayed in effect until August 5th of this year. So when you look at the seniors that ran through that tunnel on Saturday against Nebraska, each one of those seniors, I can guarantee you, were contacted at some point during the last offseason about, hey, you want to go here? Want to go here? Want to go here? Want to go here? Believe me, you know, but they were contacted, right? And each one, that, you know, it's not one guy left. Not one guy after the initial flurry left. There are three things the NCAA never counted on. They never counted on Bill O'Brien and his personality, okay? And his ability to coach and bring in a pro-style system and so forth, and the coaching staff that they have. They never counted on that part. Two, they never counted on the resolve of the players. Not one. I mean, really, they really thought that initial flurry where Red, Farrah, Brown, Fort, how they all left, that the door would be open, and especially at the end of last season. I think they thought at the end of last season, with things going sour and so forth, that people would take off even more and deplete the program even more, and it didn't happen. And number three, they never counted on your loyalty. They never counted on that. Yes, Beaver Stadium playing? Is Penn State playing to 108,000 at Beaver Stadium 7 Saturdays in the fall? No, but the average paid number 96,000 plus. Okay, that's fifth in the country. Fifth. There are 130 Division won FBS football teams, 130. There are 125 that sold fewer tickets than Penn State football this past season did. Now, did everybody show up and use their tickets every week? No. But I think there's going to be a possibility here down the road that more and more people are going to say, hey, look, things are not only getting better, but it's a lot of fun, and they're going to be in Beaver Stadium and start doing that again. But they never counted on the fact they thought that – I'm serious. Do I want to read minds here? let's face it. I think they thought that people would look around and go, I'm not going to go watch that. I'm not going to be a part of that. And then maybe attendance here would dip between probably 40 and 70,000. And instead, they sold 96,000-plus tickets per game this season, fifth in the country. Now, again, I know not all of them were used, and I know not 96,000 bodies were in the seats, but there were still tens of thousands in the seats for these games. And I think they never counted on your loyalty, what the event means to you, how much you personally enjoy it, and also how much you wanted to stand behind it. And you cannot put a price on fans like that. You can't put a price on players like that, and you can't put a price on a staff like that who have all had to endure so much, and yet everybody's hung together in that partnership, which I have felt was so important.
You know, Steve, during the break when you mentioned the number three, I went over to Sarah. I want to say I did get all three right because I was thinking the same thing.
I can vouch for that. You got it right.
And I'll tell you, the first thing that you're right, Bill O'Brien comes in, and he goes full speed ahead. He just came and took charge of that program and won over some players initially. He won over some recruits initially. And his just personality was the perfect fit for what was needed at the time.
And well, he's never used any of this as an excuse.
He's never backed off and said, woe is us at Penn State. Wow, geez, we're just... it's tough out there. We don't have players. He has never done that once. He's accepted full responsibility. And, you know, the resolve of most of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, except those Pitt fans over in the western part of the state. But
yeah, but you know what the Pitt...
They even sympathize.
But you know what the Pitt fans are? The Pitt fans are loyal to their team. That's
sure.
All. And they like the rivalry. And believe me, do you think I sit there and I take seriously... Right, because I think they're really great fans,
it's like
Auburn, Alabama, as far as I'm concerned. I don't blame them for talking.
But you know what? If you ask a Pitt fan, not about Pitt but about Penn State, because they're Pennsylvanians, I think they would defend the Penn State and talk about the nonsense that was imposed upon Penn State by, because it's a pride thing about Pennsylvania. It transcends just Penn State. And the fan loyalty, you know, if you had a Michigan come in every game for seven games, there'd be 107 to 110,000 in
sure.
the stands.
Sure. But, you know, it's interesting, though, how there's a different standard in today. John Bacon's going to be on the show Friday, and we talk about the 40-year anniversary of the epic 10-10 tie between Ohio State and Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And in discussing that, here's the scenario. Both teams came in undefeated. Big Ten had rescinded its rule on allowing anybody to repeat. Only one team from the conference went to a bowl game. This game, by the way, helped change all that.
Yeah, it had.
But it ended up in a 10-10 tie. Dennis Franklin broke his collarbone, the quarterback for Michigan, in the fourth quarter. So the athletic directors voted the next day as to which team would go to the Rose Bowl. There was no overtime back then. Well, even Ohio State thought Michigan was going to go. And instead, Ohio State was voted to go. And Bo Schembechler had infuriated him at that time. When you look back at, look at Dennis Franklin. He was 32, what was he, 32-2-1. I want to make sure I have the right number of games here. Something like 31-2, he was 30 wins, 2 losses on a tie. 30 wins, 2 losses in a tie as a quarterback in his career. You know how many bowl games he played in? None.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't play in one because of the way the rules were structured at the time. 30 wins, 2 losses in a tie, no bowl game. Now, when you look at Michigan's 73 season, which they call one of their dream seasons, do you realize the only game they sold out was Ohio State?
And they was before the expansion of the big house too.
Well, they had 105,000 seats at that time.
Oh,
so they had over 100,000 seats. They had 105,000 for Ohio State. They actually averaged 88,000 a game in 1973, wow, which is 17,000 below capacity. Now, you look at the situation here, and the average ticket sold with higher ticket prices, sanctions, and things like that, to sell 96,000 plus tickets a game, which puts you about 10,000 under capacity, because the official capacity of Beaver Stadium is 106,700. When they put the ADA seats, they lost in it. Yeah. They took out three rows to do it, so they lost seats. All right. When you think of that, and then an epic season on a really, truly an outstanding Michigan football team. Right, this is 40 years ago, but they didn't sell out every game. They were 17,000 below capacity on the average. So, you know, you start thinking about things in those relative terms. What's happening here is remarkable as far as I'm concerned. And I think the bottoming out, it's only a guess on my part, but the bottoming out, I think, by my guess, is at hand. And then the corner can now start, begin to be turned.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing the program to an upswing again. And I think what's happened here is a remarkable testament to a coach, his staff, his players, of course, more than anything else, and the fan base, which has been remarkable with their loyalty and how they've hung in through all of this, and the backbone that the fan base has shown in all this. The backbone has been incredible. And you know what? You know, Bill O'Brien said at the end of the Wisconsin last year, I've got a bunch of fighters. You can debate what he said.
There were some adjectives in there.
Okay, but you know what? The Penn State fan base has a bunch of fighters in it. And I tell you, you can't say enough about that. I talked about this at quarterback club today.
Mm.
You know, it's Thanksgiving, and you know, I talked about these same topics with them. I had extra time to kill. Nobody else was there, so you know. So I thought, you know what, we better at least tell everybody how important they are, and they are.
I think the intensity level on most seasons for most Penn State fans up to about 2 years ago was, say, about a 7 and 8. You know, get excited about the big games, not so much about some of the lesser opponents.
But that's typical of everywhere right now.
That's just human nature. However, the intensity of the Penn State fans the last two seasons is hovering about a 9. Now, some of it's tinged with a little bit of anger at some people like the NCAA president and others, and that's, again, human nature. There's some upset people about all kinds of things that went on in the media. But the intensity level of the fans at the Michigan game, even against Nebraska, the people that talk about Penn State and really want them to succeed big time is much higher now than it was.
Well, I think people resented
the
culture part of this whole argument that, it was above all. This has been a program that has never put anything above all. This program has always preached academics, going to class, suspending guys who didn't go to a class. It's about Dennis Onkotz taking a test 4 hours before playing in a big football game. It's about Joe Jurevicius, who is a super guy, but but Joe told him, if you skip this class once, this will happen, twice this will happen, and 3, you're done. Well, he skipped it 3 times, so he didn't take him to the bowl game. I mean, and you know, this is about academic All-Americans and so forth, while also playing great football and having 7 fun on-campus events every year. And somebody had the nerve to look at all these good people up and down the valley across the state and tell them, well, your culture is what? Don't tell people how to have a good time.
Yeah.
Okay? It's a good time with a program that has values. It has always had values. Joe Paterno had strong values, a staff that had values, players who embodied it. Did they have 125 angels every year? No, they didn't. All right? And Bill O'Brien's carried on those values, and those fans are still there, and nobody's going to tell anybody around here that it's a beautiful culture here. Okay? Beautiful culture. This is the same culture, okay, that has a John Urschel and has players graduating left and right. I talked about Daquan Jones today. He became a criminal justice major and is going to get his degree in criminal justice because he came from a bad neighborhood. And he felt in order to improve life in his neighborhood, it was a step he felt he had to take. Deion Barnes, talking with him today. Deion Barnes grew up in North Philadelphia. He feels that sports kept him from getting in with a bad crowd. And because of that, he is in his major because that major will open the door for him to do the same thing and help out youth in North Philadelphia or wherever he may end up, because it was an avenue that helped get him to Penn State and to get a meaningful education. These are the men of the culture that people have ripped and talked about because they don't know what in the you know what they are talking about. We'll come back and wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Happy Thanksgiving from all of us to you. Please be safe out there. Happy Hanukkah on the first evening of the Festival of Light and the Feast of Dedication.
You know,
it's
Steve,
exciting. I love this time of the year. I love it.
What you really said when you were talking about all the things, the 3 points you wanted to make, is it's so appropriate to think of it as we celebrate Thanksgiving tomorrow, because there's a lot for all of us to be thankful for this time of year. There are so many great things, the friendships, the fellowships, to begin with, the families that are all coming home, hopefully, in most everybody's household, to have the turkey dinner or whatever else you want to have on your dining room table tomorrow. But it is truly a time of being thankful.
No question. A good friend of mine, Dick Bartolome, wonderful guy. I saw him at church the other day, and I looked at him, and I said, "Hey, Dick, how's everything going?" He says, "Steve, my son's home from Afghanistan today." Well, if you don't think there is not a Thanksgiving celebration in the Bartolome house, all right, that's special.
Sure.
That's really, really, really special, you know, to have that happen. And that's just a small example, of family that you're thankful for, job you're thankful for, health that you're thankful for, good friends, and for me, like Bob and Sarah and Kevin, just to name examples, you know, people that you run into who are complimentary of your work, there's so many things to be thankful for, and thankful for all those who are so generous. We just saw that wonderful thing that happened at Geisinger about, what, a week, 10 days ago? Breast cancer awareness, which was a marvelous way of how the community came together and do something. And, Sarah, we have, of course, our favorite charity that we deal with here at Sunbury Broadcasting that we take care of every Thanksgiving, Christmas season, too, that we want to make sure that people get involved in and also donate to.
Right, the Needy Family Fund, along with the Salvation Army. You can donate at any branch of Susquehanna Bank. I'll put that plug in there. But I get to talk to, every day we feature a family that is getting some assistance from the Salvation Army in the holiday season, and I get to do those interviews, and it's just... it's great to talk to people that are so grateful about any sort of assistance and help that they can get.
And, you know, hallmark of Sunbury Broadcasting is to be engaged in the community in these kinds of really meaningful ways.
Exactly. So the Needy Family Fund, I at one point was honorary chair of Toys for Tots. And there's nothing like a Toys for Tots donation as well. Think of all the families that are going through so much this Thanksgiving that are at Geisinger, for example, the children that are at Geisinger and so forth. So there's a lot to be thankful in your personal life, and if there's any way you can make life even a little easier for somebody else, that would be tremendous. Because I know that one thing that you find in this state, one thing you find in this, in the valley, up and down, big heart. And don't ever say, well, gee, I can only give $5 and that person over there can give $500. There is no such thing as a number on a donation that's better than another. The 500 may be something that he or she can afford. The 5 may be something you can afford. And guess what? Your 5 has as much power as the 500 because it came from the right spot. And that's all that you have to think about when you do something like that and donate and be a part of something. And that's one thing when you're involved in sports like we are. We are asked to be at a lot of events that deal with causes. For me, whether it's coaches versus cancer or with Easter Seals or, you know, Toys for Tots, Salvation Army, things like that, we're often asked to be a part of that. And we always say yes. Why? Because we know how important it is to help somebody. And so many people who need assistance really don't want to take it. You know, there's pride involved, but they also know there gets to a point where they have to. Well, thank goodness there are people with big hearts that provide that when there is a need, it's taken care of.
And that's just as we begin the Christmas and holiday season, that's a fine note, Steve. You know, I know personally that what you do for all the charities in the central Susquehanna area is just amazing, and we thank you.
Oh, well, believe me. It's important to be a part of a community. What I do is very small, but there's a lot of people. Like, I look, for example, you know, we have the Purdy Golf Tournament every year. The Purdy's give back so much, and that golf tournament does so much, right? Helping out the YMCA and the great work that Bonnie Wasmer does. I'm just throwing out names.
Oh, sure.
Tip of the iceberg here. Now, of course, next week, next Thursday, is the big Sunbury Broadcasting holiday party, and of course it's the same night as the Patrick Chambers show, so okay.
Yep. Hey, Sarah wants to get in her prediction for tomorrow's Steelers Ravens.
Ravens by a field goal. Done.
Steelers by 7. Happy Thanksgiving, Steve.
Bob, Sarah, all of you, happy Thanksgiving. And to those who celebrate Hanukkah, happy Hanukkah.